everyone to this episode of the Batflip Podcast. My name is Damien, here with Matt and David. This week we're going to talk about the Oakland A's move to Sacramento for a few years. We'll go deep in on the pitching injury epidemic that has been hitting the major leagues and has been a hot topic the past week or two. We'll talk about Fanatics and the Nike battle with the players and teams a little bit with the jerseys still. We had a no-hitter happen this week, and then said player follow up with another really good start as well. So we'll talk on that. And of course, we'll jump to players of the week and moments of the week to wrap up the show. But before we get into all that, David, how are you doing this week? I know you've had some computer troubles, but we made it.
Yeah, we made it. It's been a busy weekend. We are, you know, in the process of trying to sell a place. That's going as it's going, and it's been a pretty chaotic, and I'm not even home right now. So we're doing our best, making do with what we got, but we'll have a good show hopefully. And it was a fun weekend of baseball. I think, you know, I did get to tune into some of the Cubs Dodgers games, and it was a really good series. I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point tonight, but I just want to note the Cubs got the best of the Dodgers 2 out of 3 games. That's what's really important here. And then we saw an eclipse today. That was pretty cool. So Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good. The sun peeked out of the clouds for about 5 minutes all day, and it was at 2 o'clock, which was the largest part of the eclipse that we had here. So I did get lucky, got to see the eclipse for a few minutes, it's been a fun week of baseball. It's really kind of getting in the swing of things. It's been a weird week for my team. You know, there's a lot of rain outs and a couple off days and stuff, but definitely an exciting week. There's been some tough news around baseball, and that really sucks with all the pitching injuries we'll get into in a little bit. But everything's been good. I'm excited for watching a basketball game tonight after we finish up here. So that'll be fun. Look forward to that one. And should be a good show. How are you doing, Damien?
Doing all right here. What David failed to mention was that one of those games was just a complete downpour that should have been delayed from the beginning, and it was just rigged all the way for the Cubs the entire time.
The Dodgers should really learn how to, you know, play in the elements a little more. I think that's important. Listen, toughen up, you know what I mean?
When you have to spend 20 minutes on field work and then it didn't really matter, and then you have to delay the game for 4 hours after that point, you probably should have just delayed the game the first time. But hey, anyways, it was a good weekend. I mean, we had the national championship for the women's basketball last night. We had the men's one today, March Madness wrapping up there. We had NASCAR, obviously, was at Martinsville with some chaotic races there. But baseball was in full swing, and there was some fun moments that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But, let's start on a subject we've talked about plenty of times here, and we keep getting more information on it as it happens. But we've officially know where the Oakland A's are going to be playing baseball, at least for the next 3 seasons. And it's not going to be in Oakland. They have made a deal with Sacramento and their minor league team, the Sacramento Railcats, I believe is the name. It's a minor league team for the Giants, to move to play in their park, Sutter Health Park, I believe is the name of it, for the next 3 seasons, for 2025, 2026, 2027. And there's even an option year for 2028, depending on, you know, how the building of their Las Vegas stadium is going to be. But we officially know where they're going. It's been a whirlwind for the past, year about where this is going to happen, if they're going to stay in Oakland or not. But we officially know that they're going to Sacramento now.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. I guess there's kind of good and bad about it with this specific part of the story. There's a lot of people that are involved with the A's that aren't part of the wanting to move and everything, that have been just in total flux about where they're going to be playing next year and where they're going to be spending the next three or four years, that now have an answer. It's good to see another city get a shot to look at, to get to see an MLB team up close and personal. I think that's a pretty cool factor of this, but it's just, they couldn't stay at the Coliseum because the Coliseum is basically falling apart. And, a lame duck team playing there for the next 3 years is probably worse than playing in a minor league park when it comes to, like, what you what you want to see as a product from MLB. The whole situation is bad, but this decision specifically is, I don't think, is necessarily the wrong one. The one thing I will say is that they're going to have to do a lot of work at that park in Sacramento. It's a very nice AAA park, but they're going to have a lot. They got a lot of work to do to get it into shape for, you know, for the MLB teams to come in, because, you know, stuff like just having adequate clubhouses and locker rooms and everything to support MLB teams is going to be needed there. I don't think the Players Association is going to be very happy if it was just the fact that it's a 15,000 seat park. I don't think they care, but the fact that, you know, they don't have any of the amenities that the big league parks are supposed to have is going to be a big deal. So the whole situation kind of stinks. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if anything comes out of this from the standpoint of, you know, MLB is looking at expansion. Is this like an audition for Sacramento? You know, the Las Vegas ballpark still hasn't been fully approved. So, you know, could this end up being something where if that ends up falling through, maybe they decide to build a stadium in Sacramento and with a new owner or something. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is, but it is good, I think, that there's at least an answer to, you know, the A's players and, you know, the people involved in the front office and the coaching staff and everything as to where they're going to be next year. And I'm also interested to see where the River Cats are going to play, because I don't know if they're, I guess they're going to share the stadium with the A's, but no. I mean, I don't know where they're going to play. So maybe they play at the spring training facility or something for a year in Arizona, but.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a disaster, right? That, you know, the way this has gone has been pretty awful for A's fans, for sure, especially those residing in Oakland. And then on top of that, to pour on, oh, you've got to play, you know, especially for the players now and the coaches and everybody, that they have to play in a AAA park for 3 or 4 years. It's just not good for baseball. It is going to be good for people living in Sacramento or near Sacramento. They get to watch major league teams, but the main issue I have with all of this is that the Oakland A's owner this week came and said, oh, I can't wait to watch bona fide superstars like Aaron Judge hitting home runs at our park in Las Vegas. And it's like, why not your own players? Like why does it have to be away players? Because you can never have a superstar on your team. You traded away multiple superstars in the last 5 years. Like, you know, this is an organization rotted from top to bottom. And, you know, I feel bad for those who are just going to have to, you know, endure, I think. And, you know, hopefully, you know, people are going to go out and see Sacramento. You know, it's a good thing for the city of Sacramento, which I believe just hosts the Kings right now in terms of, yes, you know, major sports franchises. So, you know, good for Sacramento. California, obviously a booming place, but, you know, this is not an ideal situation. And, you know, this could have gone better from the beginning. I hate how this has overall gone, because, you know, there should really be, you know, baseball where it's been played for the last 50 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of blame to be thrown around. I mean, John Fisher, the A's owner, can get a good, you know, good bit of that as well. But the city of Oakland really didn't help themselves in any of this situation either. They've denied multiple, you know, bids for where ballparks and turned down multiple different iterations of what a ballpark would look like there. And then they basically, you know, cut all funding that they would want. They would basically wanted it to be all privately funded there, which that's just not the way that stadiums get built nowadays. And then, you know, it's the reason the Raiders have left, you know, the Warriors have left over to San Francisco now already as well. And you weren't giving the A's anything, so now you're going to lose them as well. And even then, at like when this whole thing was happening, they even came in with like a last ditch effort of like, oh hey, here's a last offer, and the A's are going to turn it down, and they really just don't want to be here for them to still play there for the next 3 years. And it just, like, they even had contingencies on that really just didn't make sense, that like it was never going to be approved at that, but they just wanted a final offer out there to say they put a final offer out there. It is going to be interesting to see where, like, for Sacramento, I definitely think that this is an audition for the expansion that's coming. If the A's are moving to Las Vegas, they're going to say, look, we upgraded this facility to be, you know, the Sacramento's putting in their own money into this to potentially have that. And then, you know, they're supposedly going to be playing their games at either the spring training facility. They might even play in the Coliseum, which is kind of funny to think about. And there's also been talk about them potentially playing games at Oracle as well, because they're a Giants farm team. Yeah. So they might play some in at the Coliseum and some at Oracle, or maybe they just move to the spring training facility. That hasn't all been decided. That's just been some of the options that have been floated out there already. But, you know, it does suck for the fans of Oakland for sure. You know, the stadium holds what I think 14,000 is what they said in Sacramento with,
yes,
with full, when they add the extra seating in and stuff. So, I mean, that's about, I mean, even when the A's were good in Oakland, they were getting what, like around the mid 20s to high 20s there. The past 4 years, they've had like 10,000 or less a game. I think it's going to be just fine seating wise there. But it is going to be a, it's going to be a interesting to see how the city of Sacramento holds this up, and if it does have a good backing, because that's going to go a long way in this potential expansion range about if they're going to even have a legit shot at this. Because I feel like we know where the main, like we know like a Nashville or Charlotte's probably going to get one of them. And then the second team is probably more like up in the air with Montreal, but maybe is a West Coast team. So this is going to be an interesting thing to see how it overall plays out for Sacramento and if they are able to really jump into the potential expansion team game.
Yeah, I definitely think the West Coast is going to be between Salt Lake City, Portland, and maybe Sacramento now.
Boy, can't wait to see Salt Lake City get a team.
So that's what I was going to say is this might be a way, because I think that Salt Lake City has probably got the best, like, the best group that's ready to make it happen, and it's probably the most, like, probably quote unquote the leading candidate right now. But I'm pretty sure that most people around baseball and like involved in the current game don't want to see another Coors. So definitely, like, that's kind of the thing. And Sacramento is a city that, you know, it's just interesting if Sacramento would be able to support a big league team or not. And they might be able to, I mean, we don't know. We just saw recently the Kings had a potential move out of there, and they ended up building a new arena and they stayed. But you know, we'll see what happens. And like I say, the A's, I mean, I will, one last thought on the A's portion of this. I don't think that the move out of Oakland necessarily is the biggest issue for me, because if you look at Oakland, you know, obviously the city was not helping at all in them developing a new site for the stadium. And, you know, everywhere you go, it's going to be partially public funding. So that's not, that's, I know people want the owners to pay for it, but that's not the way it works. So, you know, if some other city wants to fund it, then, you know, it's like bidding for them. And you know, Oakland, look at their attendance, not just the last few years when they've been really bad, but even in years where they were really, really good. I mean, like the best their attendance ever got was like mid pack in the AL in the early 2000s when they had like the Moneyball team that was such a big deal. So, you know, it's not like they were the fans there are great. The ones that have gone to the games for a long time are awesome, but it's not like they had this just crazy baseball fan base there that, you know, that people seem to kind of think they do. But the big thing for me is just the communication aspect from the ownership and the jumbled up plan of what they're going to do. That's been the big thing for me, is just every time that owner opens his mouth, it's just nonsense that comes out. And I mean, you know, and the fact that like they make this plan for this move without any interim plan at all, like, it's just mind-blowing to me that they wouldn't have like an intermediary plan before now. I mean, they had to scramble to put this together because it's literally the end of this year that they're gonna have to do it. So I don't know, we'll see. I think it's crazy, but you know, we'll see if it works. It'll be interesting. Congrats to Sacramento on getting big league baseball. It's pretty cool. So
yeah, I'm gonna be interested to see how that plays out. But one thing that we have not liked the way that it's been playing out over the past few years is the pitching injury epidemic kind of that's been coming over Major League Baseball. You know, we talked about Yuri Perez last week, getting Tommy John, was going to be out for the year. And then, you know, I had mentioned last week, my player of the week was Shane Bieber. He had another good start this week where he probably could have been picked for player of the week. And then it came out that out of nowhere, he had elbow soreness, and he needs Tommy John. And then in the meantime, we also got that Spencer Strider has something going on with his elbow. I think they call it an elbow strain. We aren't sure exactly what it means, but it's another long-term injury as well. You know, at least 2 to 3 months, most likely at the shortest amount of time, if not looking at a Tommy John or some sort of elbow procedure. And it's just been a thing that's happened, been raising over the past few years. So we need to talk about it. What's the causes? What's the effects? You know, what's really at fault here? You know, what needs to get changed? You know, and that obviously we know about the pitch clock. There's been some stuff about that, but you know, what else do we think kind of has been an issue, and like, where does this need to go? Or is there a fix that Major League Baseball or the players could make realistically to kind of help lower this?
Yeah, I guess I could start. It's a bummer for all those pitchers. I think that the biggest problem we have today in baseball is the pitching injuries and just the ability for pitchers to stay healthy. It's been a hot topic from both the pitchers' side of things and from the MLB side of things, because MLB wants pitchers to throw, wants starting pitchers to stay in the game longer and throw more innings. So they want the pitchers to be more durable, and the owners don't want their investments to not be able to play. And pitchers obviously want to stay healthy because they don't want to be hurt. So I think both sides really do want to find a solution to this. And I think that for one thing, the whole pitch clock thing, I understand the one aspect from the player side, in that decision seemed to not have a lot of research put behind it. And I understand if they want to say, look, you know, this is a new change in our game. We don't know how this is going to affect things for pitchers' health. Let's just step back for a second and make sure it's not causing problems. It's different from that. And the Players Association basically telling the MLB, your pitch clock is causing all the injuries, because I don't think that's the case. I mean, injuries have been on the uptick for a long time in with pitchers, and I think it's just a direct trend with velocity. And I think the biggest issue you see, and I've been listening to a lot of things about this today, and I agree wholeheartedly with it, is that when you go to the lower levels of baseball, you know, the college level, the high school level, and even the youth level, every single kid that pitches is chasing velocity from a very young age. And, you know, that it's very damaging to your elbow if you're 12 years old throwing max effort constantly for 365 days a year. Like, you can't do that. That's not going to hold up. Your body's not fully developed. Your elbows, ligaments are not fully developed. Like, it's going to cause damage. And I think you're seeing that a lot now, where it's like, you know, I heard something earlier where there'd been an interview with Dr. Andrews at one time, James Andrews, who's the famous Tommy John. I think he's the one that actually did the first Tommy John procedure, but he's been around forever. And his thing was that he said, I'm getting more used to, I might get like 2 or 3, you know, little leaguers get Tommy John surgery in a year. Now he's getting, and, you know, at the time that he did this, he was saying like, I'm getting like 50, 60, 70. A year. It's just because all these kids are chasing velocity. And, you know, I don't know, you know, and we could talk a little bit about possible solutions. You know, I've heard people talking about the ball being, you know, needing to go with the tacked ball, the pre-tacked ball, like they have in Japan and Korea. And that, you know, not having to grip the ball quite as hard could help. I do think there's some merit to that. You know, I think there's been talk about, I heard a suggestion that I kind of thought might be interesting, but I don't know if it would work, but maybe, you know, increasing the size of the strike zone a little bit, because, you know, if you go back and watch when pitching was not high velocity, you know, the way that you could stay off the barrel was to pitch to the corners, but now the corners are basically the plate, the middle of the plate, and you give up lots of, you know, hard contact on them. So, that's another thing to kind of look out for. I don't think that's going to be a good solution, because I think it'd probably just lead to guys throwing hard and being on the corner sometimes, but the room for error being different for non high velocity throwers would be maybe helpful. And then I think that's kind of the big things that I've heard. And I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but something's going to have to change because, man, that's a lot. There's a lot of pitching injuries right now. It seems like every day we're getting another high-end pitcher that's injured.
Yeah, Matt brought up a really good point, I think, and I want to expand on it. The pre-tacked ball is a decent solution, but think back a couple of years ago, right, where we were dealing with the sticky stuff. And you had the spider tack and all that stuff was coming out as being an issue. And umpires are now checking pitchers to make sure they're not cheating with the sticky stuff. What I'm going to note is that, you know, 2 years ago, right, a guy like Shane Bieber won the Cy Young in 2020. He was probably using some sticky stuff, but ultimately, it's one of those things where he fell off after that sticky stuff ban. He wasn't as good. And if a guy like Shane Bieber, I'm not, you know, guaranteeing it's definitely Shane Bieber, but if a guy like Shane Bieber was going to be working with sticky stuff to improve his spin rate on a pitch like his curveball, which was his dominant pitch in that 2020 season, if he's run into arm issues the last two seasons now. So he's been chasing back to the spin rates and the stuff that he was getting with that spider tack, with those spin rates, with the sticky stuff, when that was kind of essentially legal and a wild, wild west type of thing. If that's the case and guys are now chasing that spin and the same stuff from 2 years ago, it makes a lot of sense that injuries are going to crop up as they've overworked their elbows trying to make up for the lack of the sticky stuff that they had 2 years ago. Right, last year it would have worked where they were able to maintain it, but without the injury. And this year it seems like things are popping because they're overworking it for that second season after breaking for the offseason. That tracks for me, and it's just another piece to the puzzle because I think you've coupled a bunch of things together to get this problem where you've got, you know, guys who used to use sticky stuff are not allowed to use it anymore to get a little bit extra on their fastball and keep their elbow a little bit, you know, safer. You've got guys who are throwing harder now, right? 100, 102. We're seeing like Paul Skenes is coming up throwing 102. Like that's going to be absurd, but he's been doing that for years now, right? And so when's Paul Skenes' elbow going to give out? Who knows, right? So you've got guys throwing harder than they ever have before. And then all of that coupled with now they have less time to, and it's more of the existing major league pitchers have less time to recover because the minor leaguers have been dealing with this for years and nobody's got, you know, rash to Tommy John in their minor league systems right now, at least not that I've heard of. I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but that doesn't seem to be a problem in the minor leagues. The whole entire minor leagues uses the pitch clock and nobody blows out their elbow 2 weeks into the season, except for at the major league level, right? So there's something going on at the major league level because the pitch clock itself is not the issue. They installed it in the minor leagues years ago. We have not heard of these problems. The spin, the spider tack, the tack ball, that's not an issue because 2 years ago, we were fine. They weren't blowing out their elbows, but velocity is continuing to increase. These guys, like Matt said, are going for more velocity. We're seeing it every single day. We're seeing random guys pop up and throw 98. It's so much harder to separate yourself that you've got to go more, do more. And I think the value will shift from velocity to being more reliable, right? At some point. And that may be the question is, how do we shift the market from, overworking your elbow, blowing out your arm, risking all that for better stuff to let's pay for reliability. Let's pay for a guy who can throw 93, 94, but he can do it every single year. I mean, for what it's worth, the second highest paid pitcher this year was Aaron Nola, who just goes out and throws 200 innings every year.
Yeah, and I think the big thing to me, I agree with you, David, with that. I think that the market does need to switch back to some level. I think one of the big things, you mentioned Paul Skenes as somebody, and I think that if you look at, there's certain guys who are genetically like gifted to throw 100 miles an hour. I mean, you look at like Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, like those are two names that threw 300 innings a year at throwing upper 90s, but those guys were just genetic freaks. Paul Skenes might be that guy too. Like Justin Verlander's another guy. He of course did have Tommy John surgery, but he was like 40 when he got it. You know, his elbow lasted a long time. Garrett Cole has largely been that guy. I know this year he's got an elbow injury, but it's not a Tommy John. It's something else. So, you know, it's something that I think that it's the guys like Spencer Strider is a good example of a guy who's 6 foot tall and he's 200 pounds. He's just really, he's built his body up to be really, really muscular and to throw, and he's gone to, you know, all these facilities and stuff to, and works in the off season, doesn't get enough rest and he overworks it to the point where he's throwing 100. And when he's out there, he's been dominant, but you just knew at some point this was going to happen with him. And you get guys like, you know, guys like him all the time. You hear about just, you know, the durability of some of these pitchers that are coming out here. Another guy that, I'm trying to think of other examples that are similar that are like him, but like I'm looking, I was watching today that guy from the Reds, Ashcraft, throwing 100 mile an hour cutters at, you know, and he's not, you know, built like Randy Johnson or Nolan Ryan or something. Like he's just kind of a, you know, normal looking guy. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's a big issue. It's just if you're not genetically like gifted to throw that hard by just your frame and your body's not built to do it, then trying to force it and go max effort, and it's just not going to work long term. And I think that maybe this is a wake up call for some guys, because I don't know that some of these players wouldn't be really good throwing 94 instead of 99. I mean, they might locate better. They might, you know, they might work on their throw better off speed stuff. I mean,
I want to key on this real quick. There's a guy doing this right now. It is Jordan Hicks. He has dropped from 102 to 97, and it is equally effective, but he's locating better. He's not walking people, and he's getting outs in a way that I was very skeptical of in this offseason. Very, very much so on this podcast. I was railing against, why would you move Jordan Hicks? You know who else is doing it? Is Reynaldo Lopez for the Braves. Same type stuff, right? Nasty, nasty stuff out of the reliever spot.
Yep.
But they've gone ahead and stretched him out. He's not throwing as hard, but he's locating, and he's doing it, you know.
Yeah, he's quite obviously not throwing max effort every pitch.
Right.
You know, and so that's kind of the big thing for me.
It's working. And I'm wondering if that's a solution where you've got to pull these guys off of what they used to do, which was, you know, throw it as hard as they can, right? Think of Max Scherzer grunting. And then, you know, take 25 seconds to recover, 30 seconds to recover, and then go again. That's been chopped in half. You can't do that anymore. You have to go quick, and you have to find that level of like 85-90% that you can maintain for 6 innings.
Well, if you're saying that you can't do that all the time, then that also leads to the pitch clock might also be into a factor of this as well. Now, I'm not saying it's the whole thing, right? You guys have all said everything there. I think it's a rash of kind of all of it put together. I do think that the pitch clock, implementing it the way they did, and then this year also saying, hey, like, we only had one season, we're still going to drop the time down. And it's like, guys just aren't ready. Like, there's a getting a guy out of a routine that he's been doing for years, that's going to cause issues, right? I'm not saying it's fully a thing. We've seen a guy like Mark Burley stay relatively healthy most of his career, pitching like 12 seconds every time, like in between pitches or whatever. But adding this in the way they did, I don't think helped the situation at all. Obviously, the we've seen guys throw hard for a long time in their careers, and we've seen guys that, you know, you see guys who don't throw 99 all the time are still getting Tommy John. Like Shane Bieber was like, what, 93, 94 at like his peak, really? And it's like average, and he's still having to get it now. It's because he's having to grip the ball so hard because he needs to get those spin rates back. It's because the ball's not tacked anymore and they can't use anything, right? Like it's a rash of all of these things combined are part of the issue. How do you stop that? I don't know if we'll ever get the real answer. I mean, you can't, like, as a young child coming up nowadays, everything is spin and velocity, right? Like, of course, they're going to keep trying to do spin and velocity, because if you don't have that, you're not going to be looked at. Like, that's what teams are focusing in on right now. That's what high schools, colleges, everything is focusing in on that. You have to get that from the bottom to change their development down there has to be the way that that starts from a young age, at least. Up in the majors, I don't know if you'll ever see that anymore, because you see these guys that are able to, the spin and high velocity guys, they're able to dominate. It doesn't always work that they're going to stay healthy, but they're able to dominate, and teams want the dominant pitcher, right? But they do have to find some way. I bet you see a good drop in this if MLB did bring in an actual good solution to holding these baseballs. I think it was what, 2 years ago, we had Tyler Glasnow really break down like the whole difference of how he had to change his curveball grip his whole year, or like from his whole life into that year, because of the way he did it and how much stress that puts on your elbow. And also, a thing that we have to realize and remember is that throwing a baseball is a completely unnatural motion for your arm. Yeah. Like, it is not meant to happen that way already, and it's already tearing stuff in there every single time you pitch as well. And MLB trying to limit the amount of pitchers that you're allowed to have on the roster now. They even want to bring that down more to keep starters in there more. It's like, you're just causing the pitchers to do this anyways. I wouldn't be surprised, like, if you see more teams in the major leagues potentially move to 6-man rotations. It gives them an extra day. Like, I know LA, they're basically doing a de facto 6-man rotation this year already anyways. And it seems like it's just going to help most of the people stay healthy. It gives them, you know, they have more rest time there, and you have the ability to have your pitchers don't pitch as much, right? You have more rest time, you don't pitch as much. It seems like a recipe that's going to help the pitcher, you know, be more healthy and more successful.
Yep.
So. Yeah. The one thing that I'll say with that, with the potential MLB rule change to limit pitchers more, is that I think that sometimes you have a scenario where it's almost like a game of chicken, because I think the MLB is saying, well, you know, value durability and being able to pitch longer more. And the players are saying, you're making us injured because you're making us pitch more by forcing us to. So when we can't, we wouldn't, you know, it decreases our abilities. So it's like, that's kind of the thing that to me is just, you know, that's kind of the thing to me that is difficult, but, you know, it is what it is. Hopefully they find a solution. I think the biggest problem is going to be the fact that even if they come up with a solution in the majors that works, just that's not going to fix the problem in youth ball and in college and in high school ball, because that's, I think, the biggest issue right now.
Yeah.
Obviously you're getting major leaguers hurt too, but the amount of stress you put on your body in those younger leagues probably affects yourself when you get to the big leagues. And I have more thoughts on this too, but I probably end up rambling on too long. Maybe one day we'll dive further into it, and hopefully we don't have a lot more injuries to bring it up again. But I think this whole, like, you know, the whole era of chasing stuff is something that is definitely something to, you know, that's causing problems right now.
Yeah. And like you said, there's more we could definitely say this, and hopefully we don't have to. Hopefully there's something that they figure out here, but I don't know if we'll ever have the real solution, a real answer or from it. It's just a problem that is diving so deep down within the weeds of the root of all of this anyways, that I don't know if they're really going to be able to figure out a way to fully make this go away. But anyways, we've talked also before about the, you know, the jersey debacle, about what the jerseys look like, see-through pants at picture day and whatever. But, you know, one thing that we have had is that, like, Nike and Fanatic have had their own little battle, excuse me, because you know, Fanatics has been the one that's taken the hit for this, because they're the one that's distributing these jerseys, but it's really been a Nike, you know, a Nike design that they went away from the Majestic mold that they had when, you know, ever since they bought the rights from Majestic for the MLB uniforms. They've been using the Majestic template this entire time. Well, this is now their first iteration of their own jersey, and that's what Fanatics is having to put out. And obviously players and teams aren't happy. We've went about that. There was a good article this last week about, you know, how players were more upset and how the colors of the tops to the bottoms don't match, and a whole debate there too. But also one thing that we have found out is that Fanatics can't even keep up with the demand of MLB jerseys. So they basically went, they already limited every team to only 5 jerseys now this year. And they've now went to teams before the season and said, hey, prioritize like 2 jerseys or maybe 3 jerseys. And we'll like ship those to you around opening day or maybe like a week or two after. And then like you'll get your other jersey in like 2 or 3 weeks after that. And then you'll might get your last jersey, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after that. So you're having teams like, I know the Rangers were one. I think the Astros were another one. And the Mariners,
for sure.
Mariners and Brewers have all said that like they have traditional uniforms. Like the Mariners have Sunday cream homes. The Rangers are talking about their City Connects that they wear Friday at home. They've all talked like, hey, we don't even have these jerseys in from Fanatics yet. And it's like, they're telling us it's probably going to be another 2 to 3 weeks until we can expect them already. So don't expect to see these jerseys until the end of April, beginning of May, you know, to begin with. So that's like, they basically have like the Mariners, you know, have their home, their road, and then their City Connect, but they don't have their cream colored whites. And it's just a real big debacle on top of how bad these jerseys are. Now we have, you know, they can't even keep up with the demand of what these jerseys were meant to be, easier to produce and faster to produce. And they can't even do that.
Yeah. It's like trying to get an extra jersey at high school, right? Like that's what it is, oh, 3/4 of the way through the season, we'll pull out our special jerseys because they were on back order. Right. Yeah. Like that's how it feels. Yeah. It feels like you're back in high school, but the thing that Andrew Chafin, who said it in the article this week that I found the best, was Andrew Chafin said this is it. The jersey's fine. It just doesn't feel like a Major League Baseball jersey. And that's the biggest problem for me, because it doesn't look like a Major League Baseball jersey. It was Boog Shambi who was complaining about it. I want to say this week, it might have been last week, but he said that it looked like a giveaway jersey. Right. Like these are just, they don't look right. And ultimately there's probably some solutions and they'll probably fix it at some point. But, you know, to have these kinds of distribution issues on top of the quality issues, it's such a bad look. You know, we need to keep harping on it because there's no other way it's going to change. Eventually they're just going to say, well, we've monopolized the jersey industry. So tough luck, right? Like it needs to keep being an issue from fans and players and, you know, everybody alike, because otherwise they'll just continue to shove it down our throats until we just accept it.
Yeah. And I think that there will be something that I don't think there's a quick solution this year because of just the way that it's going right now. But I do think something will come out of this in the future that things get, you know, corrected to a certain level. So hopefully, because especially if, like David said, if the players and everything and the teams and everyone continue to kind of fight it, I think that something will happen with this. It seems like something that would be easy to fix as long as you give it enough, you know, give it till next year. So
it's easy fix. Just pull out the jerseys from last year.
Right.
Yeah. Bring
those out. We have it. We have the template for it already. So just bring those out. It seems like it would be an easy solution, but the fact is that Nike doesn't want to lose all their money on this and MLB doesn't want to force Nike to do this because that would look bad. And it's like, who cares what it looks like? Your players look bad on the field right now.
I want to note that also we didn't really cover it yet. And maybe we'll save up the whole explanation for it. But there's been some overturn in the MLBPA over the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And maybe we should wait to fully comment on it until that's been kind of ironed out, because they, I think, kicked out the vice president.
Yeah.
They totally oust Tony Clark.
No,
Tony Clark's still there, but they ousted his second in command,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and they want to kind of oust Tony Clark potentially too, right. I think. They want the Henry Marino or whatever to
–
they basically want him to be the head of the Players Association. And there's like a battle there, and they're like
– right.
You said it's a long-form thing that we should spend some more time on it.
Right. So – but just as a preface, right, that's happening. That is taking away from the potential battle – of the jerseys, then also the elbow injuries that we just covered are taking away from this battle of the jerseys. I believe that without those two factors,
this would be the primary complaint of the MLBPA right now. But the MLBPA already has so much going on, right? And, you know, they might have to bake it into a CBA, right? We will get, you know, top quality jerseys on time with all our stuff, like something like that. Like, because it's unacceptable to the fans of every single one of these franchises, especially guys like Damian, who, lucky you, right? You got the Ohtani jersey before it was the true this year jersey. I would have been pissed if I was going to get an Ohtani on my team for the next, what, 10 years or whatever. Yeah. Like, and I wanted to get a jersey of that guy and it came back looking like this. I would have been furious. I would have felt like I wasted my money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was, like you said, I was lucky to have got it, you know, got the jersey pre-ordered beforehand before they rolled out all these changes. But I mean, it, bad problem to have, right? But like, I can't go buy a Yamamoto one now because they're, by the time it is, it's like he signed for 12 years, but it's bad. Like the quality's bad there. I still hadn't even, you know, I had kind of procrastinated getting my Mookie Betts one, but I'm not going to go buy that one now because it looks terrible. You know, it just, it doesn't give you any incentive to want to buy these jerseys, especially when the fact of is they're making these and then they're saying, oh, hey, yeah, by the way, you have to buy the $500 or whatever. Like they're making them so dang expensive now. You know, and they're not even really offering good replicas at, you know, half the price like they used to. You used to be able to find a jersey for $120 to $200, and then you can buy a replica for, you know, $60 or $80 or whatever. You just can't do that anymore. It's just, it's not a real possibility. So I hope they figure something out because it just looks bad. But like Matt said, I feel like this is probably a next year issue or like it's going to get pushed next year. And it just, it makes me mad because these jerseys just look terrible.
Yeah.
But so let's move over and talk about Ronel Blanco for a while. I think this happened during our recording last week. It was like right after we got off. He was in the middle of the seventh inning or something of his no hitter that he ended up throwing. I forget who that was against. I should have looked at this beforehand.
Was it the Rangers?
No, the Rangers is who we did it against yesterday.
That's right.
Mariner. It was either Mariners or Blue Jays.
Toronto.
Yeah,
Toronto. Blue Jays. Toronto. That's it.
Yep. 7 Ks, two walks there, 9 innings, obviously. So he threw that no hitter, and then he followed that up with 5 2/3 no hit innings last night against Texas as well. So I think 14 2/3 no hit innings to start the year. I think that was like the first time since like 1960 something I saw. But Ronel Blanco, a guy who like wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation, just got his chance due to some injuries there, and then starts the season with like a no hitter, and then you know 6 innings of no hit ball pretty much as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. He was impressive. I watched parts of that first outing. I watched the end of it, and you know, throwing a lot of change ups. So it was very very impressive for him to get his no hitter. And then of course, starting off this next game and just picking right up where he left off. I thought we were going to be sitting here thinking about, you know, Johnny Vandermeer for a minute there, but, he ended up, you know, Jeff Passan decided to jinx it. So we didn't get that, but, very cool for him, especially for a guy that's, you know, fairly unheralded. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, so did I. And, you know, Ronel Blanco going that many innings back to back, right? Those are the types of things that don't happen very often. It reminded you, Matt mentioned Vandermeer. That's it. It reminded me of Dave Steve, who did back to back one hitters, lost them both with 8 2/3, right? And so Blanco been able to get there, which yesterday he walked 4 by like the fifth inning when Passan even tweeted. So it wasn't really that close, but like just even that we're getting something like that. And this is another, you know, back to the pitcher elbow thing. This is a guy who throws like 94, right? Like he's not a overpowering monster pitcher, but he's able to be effective and stay in the strike zone. And that's what's really important.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to see how this plays out long term. You know, like he wasn't supposed to be in the rotation, but how can you take a guy out who's, you know, performing like this? So it's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the way pitching injuries are going right now, I don't know if, you know, like we're talking about the recent news with Framber Valdez now being out. I know Verlander's supposed to come back pretty soon, but you know he might be taking Framber Valdez's spot here. We'll see. Hopefully, it sounded like the Astros were fairly optimistic about that one, but we'll see.
Yep. Well, that'll be something we update and potentially throw into that elbow injury deal potentially. So, but let's jump over to players of the week and moments of the week and go ahead and wrap this show up. So, David, why don't you hit us with your player of the week?
My player of the week is going to be Spencer Steer. He's rocketed to the top of the Major League WAR leaderboards. He had 3 home runs this week for the Reds. Always a good chance to talk about Spencer Steer. We don't keep track of it. I want to say I gave him my player of the week one time last year too. He's the kind of hitter that can get on a tear and just carry your offense for a week. This past week he had, I'm trying to pull it up. I just realized we were going to it. He's got 12 RBI already on the season, which is right up there with the major league leaders. And this week he had a 500 on base percentage. With those 3 home runs, 9 of those RBI were just in this past 7 days. You know, a 0.7 WAR, like just a monster week from Spencer Steer. And the Reds are winning games, right? They're not. I think the pitching is holding them back right now. They're 5-4, and early on, a lot of those factors that we talked about with the Reds are kind of coming into play. Young pitching, not sure that's going to work out. The offense, though, is there, and a guy like Spencer Steer breaking out. It's not the Elly De La Cruz breakout people were necessarily thinking was going to happen, but certainly a good start for a team that kind of got decimated by injury already with Friedel and Matt McClain out. So, they're going to need this from Spencer Steer to keep him going until those guys get back. Who was yours, Matt?
I went with Tyler O'Neill, and he's a guy that the Cardinals kind of gave up on and traded to the Red Sox for his final season of team control. And, this is a big year for him because he has put up a season in his career that was like remarkably good in, I believe it was 2019 that he had such a good year. This year he's off to an awesome start. Over the past week, he's hit .333 with a 500 on base and an .833 slugging. He's hit 3 home runs over the last week and, on the season so far, which, you know, if you counted last weekend, he's actually hit 5 home runs. He's hit .357, .514, .893 on the season for a .281 WRC plus. So an awesome start for him in a Red Sox uniform. It'll be interesting to see if he can keep it up. He's always been a guy that could be a little bit streaky at the plate. So we'll see. I'm excited to see what he's able to do going forward this year. But he's already put up more WAR in 9 games than he did in the entire 2023 season, which was injury plagued and also had some issues with the manager and playing time and everything. So definitely an interesting guy to kind of keep an eye on this year to see if this kind of start, obviously he's not keeping this up, but this kind of, you know, hot start can lead him into a really good season.
Yeah, see if he can get back to those, you know, that season where he had, well, finished 3rd in MVP voting, I think.
It was 2021, by the way. He put up 5.3 wins above replacement in 2021. So it wasn't that long ago either.
There's a lot of potential there for him. So let's hope he can keep that up going into a free agent year. But the guy that I went with is, this is the year of the pitcher, I guess, for me, because I ended up going with Reed Detmers this year or this week. You know, 6 innings, 3 hits, 12 strikeouts, 1 earned run. I think it was against the Red Sox there. He's had a good two starts so far in the season, 11 innings there, you know, 15.5 strikeouts per 9. He has a 164 average, a 109 FIP. Like he's been really, really good. He was a former, you know, top 50 prospect per Fangraphs that has kind of struggled a little bit in the major leagues. Like he had a 3.77 ERA his first full season in the majors. And then last year, you know, kind of struggled to about a mid fours. So maybe we're seeing that breakout finally in year 3 for that guy. So, I'm excited to see what Detmers can do long-term here, but, he had a really good week with that 12 strikeout game against the Red Sox. And I wanted to highlight what he had did, so far this season in general. So Reed Detmers was my player this week. So let's jump over to moment of the week and we'll go to David. So what is your moment of the week?
Meet it. Yeah, Damian went with the homer pick last week, and I got to go with it this week. Last weekend, the Cubs fans started chanting Cody Bellinger's name. And he promptly hit a long home run in there. And that's definitely going down as my moment of the week as a noted Cody Bellinger fan. Now, I promise we won't do that again, as they did it again against the Dodgers, and he delivered another home run, I think, on Sunday. So they're going to be doing that all season, going for the big moment. And I'm just hoping that doesn't go to Cody's head, but just a fun little thing that happened. And, you know, overall, I mean, we didn't really touch on it. Cubs Dodgers felt like a playoff series this weekend. It was really, really electric at Wrigley Field. You know, especially the Saturday and Friday game, where both times it was really close. Dodgers won on Saturday, Cubs won on Friday, you know, very, very tight games. Sunday, Damian mentioned the rain out, but overall, just an electric atmosphere. And I kind of want to shout it out as I talk about the Cubs because of that weekend game where, you know, it felt like, you know, as the Dodgers got into the bullpen on Saturday, or the Cubs, you know, got a runner on base in the ninth inning on Friday, it was like, it felt like the game was riding and dying on every pitch. The crowd was into it. Every play was huge and electric. It was just awesome. So it was exciting to see. And, you know, that early in the season that you can have something like that. And I imagine the Dodgers are going to get a lot of teams' best efforts a lot throughout this season, kind of knowing the offseason they've had. They've put the target on themselves. And, you know, that must make it fun to watch the Dodgers, because you're going to get good in electric games like that all season long.
Yeah, my pick, I'm not going with the homer pick, because I could easily pick the Arizona Diamondbacks choke job on Friday night. But my pick is going to be Angel Hernandez. I thought that game on that, I think it was, what was it, yesterday?
I'm going to say it was yesterday, yeah.
Yesterday. Angel Hernandez was the plate umpire for the Blue Jays versus Yankees game at Yankee Stadium, and he had an interesting day. At the beginning of the game, the pitcher for, I believe it was the Blue Jays pitcher, Bowden Francis, I think, is the guy who was pitching yesterday. And he's like, he's a rookie and everything. I'm sure he was somewhat rattled by Yankee Stadium. So he is pitching to Gleyber Torres, and he steps off the mound and then quickly steps back on it and throws a pitch on a 3-2 count, I think. And I know there were two strikes, but he throws a pitch, and Angel Hernandez just lets him do it, and he calls it strike three. And while Gleyber Torres is standing there like, what, did you not see that? And the... you know, they brought the other umpires in, and apparently nobody saw it. So, you know, Angel Hernandez totally screwed that up. And then the funniest part about that play was that not only was that like totally not a cool, like a normal pitch, it was also not even close to being a strike, and he still called it a strike. So not only did he blow the call on the guy stepping off and should have called time and whatever, but he also just blew the strike call too. It wasn't even close. So that was my pick, Angel Hernandez. You know, David was talking about umpiring earlier, and I think that umpiring, I think in general, is actually getting better. But you see so many clips from guys like Angel Hernandez and CB Buckner that are just atrociously bad, that it's like they really make the umpiring. I wonder what other I think I tweeted this out yesterday. I wonder what other umpires think of Angel Hernandez, because their reputation, it just takes – I know their reputation is not going to be great regardless, but their reputation takes such an enormous hit because of Angel Hernandez. And I guess, you know, a couple of the others like CB Buckner and some of those guys too. But, like, just Angel Hernandez in general is ridiculous. And I think that just kind of goes to show you what he does. Anyways, I'm very – it left me speechless. So I thought I'd call that my moment of the week.
He wasn't even the one.
That was
the, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I was going to say, CB Buckner, I think, had the best game in the Cubs-Dodgers series. I think that's what it was. It might have been Laz Diaz, who's another one that's kind of infamous. But the umpiring in this series was the biggest blight on the games, because it kept taking the game out of the batter's hands. Like, I think it hurt the Dodgers at one point, then it hurt the Cubs, then it hurt the Dodgers. It was atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about it. Like, I sent you guys earlier, the LA was like the second least favorite team this week or whatever. It's just been, I think umpiring this year has been really, really bad, but not to go off on that tangent. But for my moment of the week, I'm going to go to the Rays Rockies game, which I believe was on Friday. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was Friday. The Rockies home opener, I think.
Yeah, it was their home opener. So they go down to the Rays 6-2 at one point. They come back to tie it at 6-6. And I believe that was in the eighth innings when they lost, or the ninth innings when they lost the lead, I believe, again. And then they the Rockies end up getting Jake Cave walked. He advanced to second on a wild pitch. Brendan Rodgers then walked. Nolan Jones then walked, which set up bases loaded with Ryan McMahon at the plate. And Ryan McMahon hit a walk-off grand slam versus the Rays on their home opener to end up winning the game there. Like I said, they were down at 6-2 at one point. So to come back, tie it, lose the lead again, and then hit a walk-off grand slam with that place on their home opener. It's always electric those days. So Coors Field was rocking, and it was just a really fun moment, which I don't know if the Rockies are going to have many fun moments and many candidates for moments of the week, them on the good side of that. So I had to give that that moment of my moment of the week. So, I think anything else before we wrap it up and head on out of here?
Look at that show under in an hour. Good job, guys.
Yeah. I needed it. Yeah. I'm going to have a meltdown over the basketball game, because if UConn wins, I win like $200. So, But and the Braves game is also tied. So I'm ready to wrap this one up. But I think it's been a good episode. So
yeah, it's been a good episode. And next time we come to you will be Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah.
So we will talk to you guys next Monday for that. Thank you guys for tuning in.